we sit here?
Good morning. Today is June 9th, and this is the Education Subcommittee for the Joint Ways and Means budget process for the 2015 legislative session.
Yes.
We are going to change the agenda, the priority of bills. We're going to start with House Bill 3063. Then we will move to Senate Bill 418. And then we will work together Senate Bill 218, House Bill 5025. And so I'm going to open a public hearing, and then Krista is going to give us some background, okay?
Okay,
I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 3063.
Okay, Krista. Thank you, Madam Chair. Members of the committee, House Bill 3063 comes to you from the House Committee on Higher Education, Innovation, and Workforce Development with a due pass recommendation. The bill appropriates $3 million in general fund to the Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development for a grant program to community colleges. There is a dash A1 amendment online, which also adds a clause that says, or any foundations of community colleges.
Yes.
To the list of programs that can receive these grant funds.
Thank you. Okay. Representative Gallegos, Representative Reed, we welcome you. It's Tuesday in the second week of June. We're trying to get finished before the end of June, so that means you keep your testimony short.
Yes, Madam Chair. I'm Tobias Reed. Thank you for letting us be here this morning. I'm fortunate to be chair of the House Committee on Higher Education, Innovation, and Workforce Development. Representative Gallegos is our vice chair, and I think we are, of course, he will speak for himself, but I think we're here to represent the committee and commend this bill to your support. It received unanimous support from our committee, and I think we were all very impressed with the results of this program, particularly, at least I'm most familiar with what's happening at Portland Community College, having visited there and interacted with some of the students who are part of this program. I'm very impressed with the way they've constructed a program that deals with all the challenges that are associated with community college. I think that's particularly relevant given the Secretary of State's audit that was released recently. I'm sure you're all familiar with that. It really underscores the importance of the wraparound services that are part of what Portland Community College is doing. And we're very interested in making sure that this bill passes and those dollars and those opportunities are available to community colleges around the state. I think you're going to hear from Portland Community College, some of the students who've been part of that. I know you'll hear from the mayor of Beaverton, who has made a commitment to this program as well. I hope we'll be able to support it.
Thanks.
And enjoy the great things that result. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair and co-chairs, committee. Thank you for allowing us to be here this morning. Joe Gallegos, House District 30, vice chair of the Higher Ed Committee. You know, just maybe for the freshmen on the panel, just a little background. In the previous session, we had a significant education budget that was passed. Unfortunately, the community college and workforce development piece did not get funded the first time around. So during the short session, we were able to pick up a bit of loose change, $750,000, dedicated to this Future Connects, Aspirations to College program, which is basically built on the Future Connect program that started out in PCC. And it's just an awesome, awesome program. It really is. It's the kind of program that I'd like to see replicated in various other ways. And the thing I like about it is the partnering that it does. It partners private funds as well as public funds. And not just public funds include local municipalities as well as state funds. So it's a nice partnership and way in which I think we can look at supporting education, hopefully in other ways as well. This time we're asking for $3 million to fund the program, and that would pay for tuition for these low-income first-generation students to get into community college, but it will also pay for a leadership course as well as wraparound services for the 2 years that they're in the programs. Now, you have to realize that if we can get them through those 2 years, then the likelihood of going on for 4 years or getting into some other trade certificates is extremely high. The other thing I like about this program is the success rate. As Representative Reed mentioned, the success rate varies from about 80% to even 90-plus percent. I mean, it is phenomenal. So it's clearly the way to go, and I really want to encourage us to continue funding the program. So that's my spiel. Thank you.
Thank you. And we'll take a couple of questions here for this panel because I'm sure you need to move back to your offices and other appointments. Did you have a question, Representative Huffman?
Something for the record and then a question to get on the record, the answer for that question. But I wanted to say I'm looking forward to the testimony because having been a longtime member of the Higher Ed Policy Committee, we're going to hear some very persuasive testimony this morning on the success, particularly of. So I think PCC, we can look at that as kind of a pilot program,
right,
and that's been perfected and now it's ready to be launched out. But for the record, Representative, if you could explain kind of how the fund would be administered in the form of a grant or matching funds or how that would work.
Yeah, it's a statewide competitive grant operation, and as I said, so it'd pay for tuition and the wraparound services and so on. I think that's, we're going to have testimony from other folks who can speak more directly to that, though. I will mention, too, again, the thing that I like about it and I stressed about was the partnership, and I believe the city of Portland contributed like $400,000 to the pot, as well as $100,000 for each from Beaverton and $100,000 from Hillsboro. So I think, again, you see how these municipalities are participating.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And
thank
I
you.
Appreciate all your work on this.
Yeah.
Because I know it does make a huge difference.
Thank you.
Okay, while they're changing, we're going to have Denny Doyle, who's the mayor of the city of Beaverton, and Denise Frisbee from PCC board member.
Good morning. I will be brief.
Good.
Madam Chair, I got the message.
That's music. That's music to our ears.
Well, again, thank you. My name is Denny Doyle, and for the record, that's who I am, and I'm the mayor of the city of Beaverton. And thank you for letting us appear before you today on a critical matter for our community. The city of Beaverton is proud to stand 100% beside PCC to support the Future Connect program. Beaverton is into sponsoring our second class of students. A total of 100 youth between the two cohorts are going through the two-year process. 96% of the students that started have stayed in school. Let that sink in. That's pretty impressive. Without the support of Future Connect, a typical group of 100, only 24% would still be there to finish their two-year degree. So that's an incredible measure of success, but more importantly, beyond the numbers, it means that doors are open for these youth and they have greater expected opportunities and outcomes throughout their lives. This is not a one-time middle 20s fix. This is a lifetime experience for them. Future Connect helps youth realize their own potential. Last February, a student from Beaverton who was in this program testified at a city council meeting and thanked us for pursuing the Future Connect program. He did it clearly and concisely in his parents' second language. After wrapping up his success at PCC, this would-be high school dropout is now pursuing a degree at Portland State, all because of this innovative approach. We believe Future Connect is a great investment, especially given Beaverton's changing demographics. One in four people in Beaverton was not born in the United States. One in three self-identifies as a person of color in the latest American Community Survey. We have nearly 100 languages spoken in our school district at home, and 28% of Beaverton households speak a language other than English at home. We know this is what the outcomes for the students of color and first-generation college students are incredibly challenging. It's difficult. This is helping smooth that path. Our Beaverton leaders believe that all of us, all levels of government, must do our part to support our first-generation community members and students of colors throughout our great state of Oregon. And with your support, investing $3 million in programs like PCC Future Connect means we can do more together everywhere in our state. It works. The results are real. I want to thank you for your support.
Thank you.
Good morning, Chair Munro and Chair Compton, members of the committee. My name is Denise Frisbee. I'm a member of the Portland Community College Board. And like Mayor Doyle, I want to thank you for your past support. And I'm pleased today to be able to speak, asking for future support for House Bill 3063, which would provide more money for this Aspirations to College bill. You've heard already the gist of it. Portland Community College's Future Connect program is a model example, kind of a pilot program, if you will. And what the state dollars have done, we've been able to leverage that with local government matching and philanthropic dollars through our foundation. So it's really doing exactly what you would want to see state dollars doing, furthering and launching. But the programs are specific to that community. Right now, we work with the city of Hillsborough, pleased to work with the city of Beaverton, the city of Portland, Multnomah County, and we're working to expand in other parts of Washington County, St. Helens, and Yamhill County. So the program started in Portland and is moving out, and we are really appreciative of your contribution to launching that program. What this program does is provide intensive support services, and I know you've all read the Secretary of State's audit, and we all know that that's the key. And with that kind of coaching, mentoring, and intensive advising support, these students go on to complete high school and go to college, and as Mayor Doyle said, the success rate is around 85% to 90%. So we're really proud of the program. We know it works, and we just need to keep it expanding and taking in more students. We would like to thank Representatives Huffman and Representative Tobias and Representative Gallegos for their chief sponsorship of this legislation. They've been champions from the get-go, and we are grateful for their support. We had hoped to be introducing to you some of our students who we just got a text and they're late and they're coming. So I don't know if we can move them back in as soon as they get here, but I think they're the best advertisement for the program. And you'll meet some of the staff, the coaches that really make this happen. They're really highly committed and they're the ones who are on the ground and the reason why the program is so stunningly successful. So thank you for your past support. Really, really need your future support. And I look forward to getting the students up here for you in any minute now.
Okay, and Senator Roblin has a comment or question?
I just want to know how many kids with the 3 million we're anticipating adding to the program. Do you know how many kids that would be?
At this point, I think you mentioned the number of students we're serving in Beaverton is 100 students. We're serving about 500 plus students, I think, and I will make sure that's correct. And when the students get up here, let you know. But we'll be able to expand that. This money goes to the Higher Ed Commission and is then competitively granted back out to communities. So until we see what we get, we don't know exactly how we can expand. But we've been busily raising dollars through the foundation and working with the local governments to increase the match. So we'll be able to spread it.
Follow up?
I do want to say that, you know, the kinds of resources that are coming to make this work are really important to make it work, and everybody gets uptight about talking about we need more money for education, but in all the programs where we put more money in, we get better results. I'm always shocked by that, because people keep telling me that it's not about the money, it's just having the program. And so I find it intriguing that, you know, if we spend 100 kids and we get $3 million, that's $15,000 extra per biennium. Oh, I think most elementary and high schools with 15,000 per student would be really helpful in their ability to provide what they need to be successful. And I think that these programs are good because they are taking kids who are traditionally not being successful. That is more expensive anyway. And giving them the opportunity, but they're giving them the opportunity because they have the staff and other people to help them and the money to pay for it. And we don't talk about that very often here because we don't have enough money to do what we all know would be right. But when people say just giving it money is not the answer, I kind of say to them, it certainly has been in every program that's been successful. They have gotten more resources in order to do that. And I just hope that we continue to remember that it is dollars that make a difference, because dollars by the people who can make the intimate relationships with those kids that give them the belief in themselves that they can be successful. And I appreciate the projects. I appreciate the plans. I just want to point out that we could be more successful with a lot of kids if we really had the resources.
Mm-hmm. Co-Chair Monroe and then Representative Smith Warner.
Yeah, I saw a bumper sticker the other day. It said, if you think education is expensive, wait till you find out how much ignorance costs.
Representative Smith Warner.
Thank you, Madam Co-Chair. I just wanted to, I think you and many folks know I'm a great believer in this. I've had an intern in this. I have been regularly exposed to kids who have come through this program, and it is life-changing. It is an incredible thing to see. I wanted to just call that out. And also to just say that I think this is also a good example of our focusing our priorities on outcomes and not just access, that there is a point of, you know, we have expanded access to higher education tremendously in this state and in this country over the last 40 years. And this is part of the movement to outcomes, as whether it's, and I just think that's important to note that these are the kind of programs that, you know, you can lead the horse to water. But you want to help it graduate. You want to help them graduate. And this is the kind of wraparound helping those outcomes to helping them happen. And I think that's really important. And that's a really critical element of this program.
Thank you.
I think the dollars invested, to try to answer your question, if it follows the same pattern as we have, you could be helping at least 3,000 students in this process with the same match. Mm-hmm. The key to this is mentoring. I can't tell you how important that is. The tuition is just part of the equation. But thank you. That's a great question.
Yeah. Well, thank you for your drive down I-5 this morning. And
lovely morning.
In sunny weather. I don't know if you're responsible for that, too. So,
well, I get blamed for everything, so I'll take credit for that, too.
Okay. Well, thank you.
Beaverton.
Thank you.
Thank you.
John Wyckoff and Julia Pride. And then we will have a couple of students, I believe. Go ahead, John. Lead it off.
Chair Comp, members of the committee, for the record, John Wyckoff, the Oregon Community College Association. I will be brief, and I'm sure I will be far less interesting than the students that you are going to hear from soon. But I just want to make a couple of quick points. The first is that, you know, you heard a bit about the Secretary of State's audit, and you've heard about it before in this committee. And I really think this program really highlights what that audit was saying, that the community colleges, through budget cuts throughout the recession, where our budget went from sort of high watermark of about $500 million down to about $385, these are exactly the kind of things that the colleges could not support and did not have the resources to support. And giving these programs resources does make them more successful. It's a fairly straightforward equation. You've also heard about its ability to leverage dollars at the local level, and I think that's really a key factor in this program. Through the competitive grant process, 14 campuses did receive funding through this, and in some cases, with Portland Community College and Clackamas, they partnered in the program as well, so it really helps foster partnership. But overall, this has just been a tremendously successful student. It really highlights the work that community colleges are meant to do, bringing in students who would otherwise probably not have the ability to have a college education, and this makes that happen for them and gives them the resources and the advising and all the support services to make that happen. So we enthusiastically support this program and hope that you will be able to as well.
Thanks, John. Appreciate your work.
I'm Julia Pride from Southwestern Oregon Community College. I'm a student there. I just have a little something to say about this. This last year, I was a recipient of this Connect grant, and unfortunately this year, the funding for it got cut from our school. So I have a little speech prepared. When was the last time anybody here was taking college classes? Anybody have college loans they're still paying off? Did you know that the average student spends approximately $11,000 on their education at a two-year college in tuition alone? That's not counting other expenditures such as food, living, transportation, supplies, books, and other personal expenses. This Connect grant makes a huge difference in those expenditures. I'm a living example of this. I want to show you what this grant provides for these students and this community by telling you about my personal experience, why I was in need of this grant, how I got involved, and what it's done for me. Most of my life, I was raised middle class until about 2010 when my father was laid off, along with 22 other employees when the local economy crashed. Things are difficult, but we make things work. I'm not looking for sympathy here. I'm very proud of how far my family has come from this, and it has allowed me a great opportunity to learn much more responsibility than someone of my age would typically get, and I'm very proud of that. I pay for my college through scholarships and grants, and I work, and thankfully I have no loans. So I got involved with this grant my senior year of high school. The TRIO program at my high school, the person there running it was helping me fill out college applications and scholarships and grants, and she told me about this, and I was very excited because paying for school is very stressful. And to be able to have something that helps alleviate the stress of paying for it and being able to pay for it at all is amazing. And I was very excited about it. The grant that I received was based off of financial need and grades. So only those who were serious about their school and really had a need were able to receive it. There were about 20 from my school who received this grant this past year. This grant has helped me in several different ways. Number one, in peer interaction. I've gotten to meet together at least twice a term with other students who receive this grant, and we get to talk about school and different classes and different professors and how are things going and tutoring, and we get to come together and meet other people. This grant pays for the cost of books. That's what it was primarily designed for, and that doesn't count other supplies like pens, papers, pencils, lab glasses. But to give you an idea of how expensive that books are, in fall term I spent nearly $600 in books alone. That's a third of the value of the Oregon Opportunity Grant that it provides per term for a full-time student, a third of the cost. And there's a really high need for this grant. In Myrtle Point alone, according to the Oregon Board of Education, the number of families that live below the poverty level has increased in this past year from the 20th percentile to the 30th percentile. It's a huge need. And if we're going to make a difference as community members, as students, as individuals, an education would be greatly appreciated and helpful. So based on my own personal experience, I can more than verify that this Connect grant makes a huge difference. It alleviates the financial costs of a quality education and relieves the stress and worry that comes with paying these costs. This grant isn't just a handout. It's a lifeline, and it's a lifeline that more students need.
Thank you, Julia. Any questions for Julia?
Yeah, thumbs up. Thank you. So finals this week?
Yeah. I got to book it back to Coos County for finish up some finals today, actually.
Okay, well, good luck.
Thanks.
It's amazing the people that came
Senator,
from Coos.
Senator Roblin.
It's amazing the people that came from Coos County were here on time.
Well, I left yesterday.
That is the real problem, is that you do have to leave the day before. It makes it easier to be on time. It's just a fun. It is always funny because we do have to plan a lot more when you're 200 and some miles away. And are you living at home with the grant? Is that making it more expensive?
Yeah, and I travel 50 miles round trip every day to go to school.
Yeah.
So
when you know those little places in the little towns, and obviously you went to Myrtle Point?
Yes, I graduated from Myrtle Point High School just last year.
So it is that there are other expenses that people don't realize, even in the rural areas and in the cities, the same kinds of problems, and the cost of housing, all of those things are such a big part. So of the grant, it pays the books. What's the most important thing from the whole thing, other than the expenses that you got out of the experience of being a part of the program?
I definitely think the interaction, because I'm a very introverted person, and so I'm very focused on my studies. I take an average of 24 credits per term.
Wow.
I'm kind of crazy. But it allows me to get more involved with what's on campus, because we do have the group of 20, 25 students who meet, you know, 2-3 times a term at least. And this past term, we've probably met 6 or 7 times. So, but we get to sit down and we get to discuss, you know, what types of different teachers there are on campus and the different courses and, you know, what interests you. And we get the peer tutoring, which is really helpful because it's somebody who's just come through that program. And so they have a better idea of what to expect when you walk into that classroom. And coming from such a small school, it's a big difference to go from a classroom of 10 individuals to now I'm sitting in class with 45, 50 individuals. So that's been a big deal, along with being able to pay for my books and not have to take out those loans. So,
okay.
That's a new meaning to full-time student.
Pardon me?
She adds a new meaning to full-time yes, student.
24 credits.
On top of that.
Yes. And what?
And I work part-time on top of that, so.
Okay. Congratulations, and keep it up, and keep taking your vitamins. Representative Smith Warner.
Thank you. I just feel required to ask after that. So what degree are you working toward?
Actually, this year I'm graduating with my Associate of General Studies after just 9 months. And I am transferring to Western Oregon to pursue a degree in education and mathematics.
Great. And Western has a lot of great wraparound services for students as well. So.
Great. Representative Huffman has a follow-up.
Julie, did you have dual credits going into? Did you get some college credit in high school?
I graduated high school with 18 college credits. I took pre-calculus and calculus and the writing 121, 122 in high school. So, yeah, I did get a little buffer.
Good. So. Thank you. You definitely are an all-star for what we wish all students could do. So thank you.
All the kids in Myrtle Point do that.
Actually, there are quite a few.
Senator Roblin.
Not in my district. I'm just.
Yeah, I know. Okay, thank you. I think we have Keisha Tosh here and Cameron Soto. Are you ready? Did you have a breather?
Yeah.
Okay.
We're all caught up.
Yeah. Let's hear it. And you just heard Julia, so I don't know how many credits you're taking. But, she sets a high bar.
Yeah. Well, we actually just got back from a study abroad program for 3 months.
Okay, and if you would say your name, please, okay. For the record.
I'm Kasiah Tosh.
I'm Cameron Soto in Southwest Portland.
Southwest what?
Portland.
Southwest. Yeah, okay, thank you.
High school. We both went to Beaverton High School. We both study abroad. I was in India for 3 months, and she was in Central America. And all of this was kind of due, I'd feel, to Future Connect. I was in high school my senior year. I didn't think I was going to go to college. My counselor in high school recommended that I go to this meeting. And I go to this meeting, and Josh Laurie is there. He's the scholarship manager now. He was really energetic, and I didn't think I could go to college in the first place. And he's telling me that I could kind of get paid to go to college, and found out that that's true. And I got a check in the mail, and that was kind of a crazy experience. But So within 1 month, being introduced to Future Connect, and not thinking I was going to go to college, I'm now. I think we're both co-enrolled with PSU. Just study abroad, and I'll be majoring in accounting from PSU, so pretty excited.
For me, it was a little bit different. So I was very busy in high school. I actually was I'm an IB diploma receiver and an AP scholar.
A full diploma?
Full diploma. So
You're still breathing.
So I actually started college with an extra 32 credits, I believe. The only difference was similarity was I did not think I was going to go to college at all. I started out with a pretty busy background. I'm the eldest of six, and my mom was a single mom for a good chunk of our lives. So the idea was for me that I was going to be taking care of my siblings and trying to work on money. So I actually picked up my first job as soon as it was legal. And then I ended up being referred to this program called Future Connect and got to meet a couple of people and just fell in love. We got really great support for the things that I didn't know how to do, things like applying for financial aid and figuring out how to apply for classes, lots of things that I think a lot of people would consider like very easy knowledge, but being first in family, it was not something that I had ever gotten. So I was able to work with a lot of different Future Connect people learning about how to do college. And I think that ended up being really valuable. So I went through my first year and was working full-time, going to school full-time, and then we both just got, yeah, accepted into a scholarship program for our study abroad. So we were into a full-ride scholarship for 3 months, where we were able to go around and explore and understand how to do different types of education, and lots of different job work, all just because Future Connect was able to, I think, show us that.
So. Okay, thank you. Committee, any thoughts?
Good job.
Yeah.
Great job.
And what I'm hearing is the power of just starting out and encouragement from a teacher or a friend, let's go to this meeting.
Yeah.
That's really something where you did not expect the results to be what they are. And I hope your mother is dealing fine with your other 5 siblings. And she has, it's a tough job. Senator Roblin?
Yeah, I was just going to say that. I hope your mom is as proud of you as you seem to be of yourself, which you should be. And that you see this as an opportunity for your younger siblings to see a path forward for them that they otherwise would never have imagined possible.
Yeah.
Yes, because now you're a mentor for life.
It's true.
Yes. Okay, well, thank you for coming down to the Capitol. I hope you have a chance. I do know it is finals, but that you have a chance to look a little bit about our history, because this is your Capitol, and it is you and your cohort of students that are going to be the next people sitting up here. So thank you. Senator Roble.
The other thing I will say, you know, when you come from Kuskokwim, you always do come the day before. We don't have the traffic that you have here, it takes you as long to get to small distances as it takes us to go across our county, oftentimes, and it is actually really frustrating for those of us that aren't used to traffic. So I understand that getting here is a lot different. You know, when in Coos County, if you had 40 miles to go, you can do it in 40 minutes or less. If you want to go fast. And that's just about any day, time of day. If the logging trucks are there, they usually go faster than that anyway. So it is easy to get from point A to point B. And having drawn to the airport last night to have my daughter go off, it was an adventure to get there in time.
But you got to see Mount Hood on
the... Oh, it was beautiful last night. Yeah. It was really, really nice. And there were lots of other people who seemed to be wanting to go to the same place. We don't find that in Coos County.
Well,
so I appreciate getting here, because it is hard, especially when we have you come in rush hour.
Yes.
It never works out very well.
And thank you. And, again, our appreciation and good luck. I don't think it's going to take much luck for our students that testified here today to be successful. So don't ever give up. Don't ever give up.
Thank you.
Anybody else here in the audience to testify on House Bill 3063? Please come forward. And I don't have your... Oh, is this Cameron? No.
I'm Jose.
Jose.
Mm-hmm. Good morning.
Good morning.
I'm Jose Esparza. I'm the Recruitment and Outreach Coordinator for the Future Connect Scholarship Program at PCC. Mm-hmm. So one of the things I wanted to just share... you know, we kind of talked about the importance of this, just the relationships that I think we have with students. I think that's the part that really makes the biggest impact, especially when we're working with first-generation low-income students. So one of the things that we do in the program is we try to see ourselves as a resource for a lot of high schools. You know, if you are familiar with a lot of, especially with high school counselors, they want to serve every single student in their school, but just because of the number of different responsibilities and roles that they play, they really can't. So one of the things that we do with Future Connect is, it's really important for our work is the outreach and high school visits and getting out and actually speaking in front of students, not just the IB students, you know, who are high achieving, but students like Cameron, who they have the potential, you know, they have the capacity, but they just don't know how, and sometimes they just need that little extra, that extra push and encouragement, you know, helping them, you know, see beyond those barriers. Especially when that barrier could be financial. So one of the things that we do is, like, I think in Future Connect we visited with over 1,600 students in this last year, you know, visiting high schools everywhere from Troutdale all the way to Hillsboro. we had over 120 high school visits, you know, and I just, you know, talking to students who even, especially reaching out to the students who don't see themselves as going to college, you know, and having that one-on-one conversation with them and helping them understand the impact and education that we're going to have, you know, with them, but also for their family and then the legacy that they leave behind. One of the things that we're doing at Future Connect is through a partnership and a grant that we got through the Ford Family Foundation is going out into some of the rural communities like Scappoose, St. Helens, Vernonia, and seeing how this model can work in those communities, knowing that one size fits all doesn't work. So looking at different funding models on how we can work with those communities. Last night we were just at the Forest Grove City Council meeting having the same kind of conversation, you know, and explaining to them for $2,500, you know, dollars a year, you know, per student, you know, they're going to receive, you know, all kinds of wraparound services from helping them get into that, into college, you know, through the admissions process, which, you know, testing, financial aid, you know, red flags that come up, especially when they start asking for all kinds of documents and the family doesn't know how to help them out. So we help them get started, and then more importantly, we stick with the students. In Portland, we work with students for up to 3 years. In Hillsborough and Beaverton right now, we currently work with students for up to 2 years. And even helping them navigate, you know, obstacles that get in the way. Sometimes when life gets in the way of school, we help them troubleshoot those things and look, you know, and look beyond, you know, look beyond that. So, yeah.
Thank you, Jose. Megan, did you want to make a comment?
Yes, Chairs Monroe, COMP members of the committee, for the record, my name is Megan Moyer. I'm the Government Relations Director for Portland Community College. I did want to provide a little bit of technical context to Senator Roblin's question about how this money, what would it serve? Obviously, it's a competitive process, so PCC would not know how much we would receive, but our cost per student per year is $2,500. So that can give you some context. Every program, there are 14 community colleges who receive this funding. They structure it a little bit differently, so it's not a universal number, but I think that that's a pretty safe calculation. We do leverage our money with private philanthropy and local government support. So we're lucky in that regard. Not everyone has local governments that are in a position to do that. That is one of the reasons that we're looking to build a stronger partnership with the state, is that we want to make sure that these programs are offered, at least at PCC, district-wide. And that's not an option in some of our smaller communities. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. And a final word, Senator, because we have three other bills to hear.
A year.
Yes.
Thank you.
Yeah, and if I could just add, I mean, right, we received over 500 applications for our scholarship program. We could only award 300, 200 in Portland, 50 in Beaverton, 50 in Hillsborough. So we have about 200 students right now on our wait list.
Yeah. Yes, I'm sure. Well, I would be there if I was still in college too. So thank you.
All right, thank you.
Okay, I am going to close the public hearing on House Bill 3063 and open a public hearing on Senate Bill 418. And Mr. Wilson's coming up, and we're doing the changing of the guard.
Madam Chair, members, you heard Senate Bill 418 last week. The core bill dealt with dual credit or accelerated credit programs, and then there was also an amendment dealing with the fifth year issue, if you remember. At that time, there were still four or five members that had, or witnesses that had signed up, and you did not get to them, so the decision was made that to come back with just those people that had signed up to finish the public testimony on this bill.
Okay, if you would announce, let's see who's.
We have Iris Marie Chavez and Joel Fisher, if they are here. Guess not. Andrea Henderson and Elizabeth Lundy.
Wonderful.
Good morning, Co-Chairs Monroe and COMP members of the committee. For the record, I'm Andrea Henderson, Executive Director of the Oregon Community College Association. And I wanted to speak to the original Senate Bill 418, not to the amendment, but to the bill that's in front of you. which deals specifically with the accelerated learning. This is a conversation that community colleges have been very engaged in. It's a high priority for us to provide opportunities for high school students to take classes while they're still in high school and receive college credit. And it's something that really is one of the core parts of our mission, and we have greatly increased the number of credits that we've been awarding to high school students over the last several years. That being said, we do have concerns with the bill in front of you, and hope that it can be amended greatly before it moves forward, because we want to ensure that it creates a process that really benefits students and can increase the number of students that actually are enrolled in these programs. I wanted to highlight three concerns from the community college perspective. First is the bill applies to all college or all high school students. And we believe strongly that it needs to be amended to refer to students that are college ready. We're very concerned about high school students that take college level classes that aren't ready and don't pass the classes. It creates a problem for those students as they move forward into post-secondary education, as they will have a failure on their record, essentially, which one, it can trigger high school students starting college on academic probation, which is not beneficial to them. And secondly, the courses that they take in high school count towards the overall number of courses that they can take before they run out of financial aid. And so we're concerned about high school students taking courses in high school, not passing the courses, but yet losing that ability to take those courses in high school because of that financial aid cap. So we want to make sure that they're ready to take college-level courses before they actually do that. Secondly, the bill has some parameters around online classes. And the bill has been amended, so it is better than it was, but it's still, our worry is that it limits access to students in high school that want to take classes online to get that college credit. We have a number of colleges around the state that offer online courses to high school students, particularly in areas where they're located far away from the community college and need that online exposure. And so we do have concerns around that. And then thirdly, we have concerns around the teacher qualifications requirements that are in the bill. We have standards that we have to follow from accreditation around specifically around teacher qualifications. And one of those core pieces is that for any courses that we offer, the qualifications for the teachers must be the same across the curriculum, no matter where the classes are delivered. So we have to have the same standards for our faculty that are teaching at the college as that are teaching at the high school. And so the bill does move some of that decision-making to HEC, and we'd like to see it amended specifically to recognize that there are accreditation standards that need to be met as well. There are a number of technical issues in the bill, and I'd be happy to submit some amendments in terms of just language that's not quite right that talks about quarter hours rather than credit hours. And so there's a number of cleanup issues that need to be addressed in the bill as well, just to align with college language. And we'll look forward to working with the committee to make those changes if this bill were to go forward. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions you have.
And you could submit, is it all right if Andrea submits amendment of language to you, Doug? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, great. Thank you.
Okay, thank you.
Okay.
And please continue. So, I already forgot your name.
No, that's fine. Co-chairs Monroe and Comp. I'm here only to answer technical questions, should you have any, from Andrea. I totally support what she's saying. Our concerns with the bill are the broad brush that creates collateral damage that's unintentional for some very good programs. So
okay.
I'm merely here for that reason.
Her name? Oh, you need to say your name for the record.
I'm sorry. My name's Elizabeth Lundy. I'm the retired Vice President for Instruction and Student Services at Clackamas Community College.
Thank you, Elizabeth. Okay, any thoughts or questions for these two that are giving testimony today?
Oh.
Yes, Cassandra Roblin.
Thank you. I understand the accreditation issues with regard to community college courses that are given and having the same master's degree or whatever in the subject matter. Universities don't seem to be having as much trouble with that. Aren't they the same accreditation institution? So why is there an issue with community colleges that's not happening at universities?
to answer that. I think that's an excellent question, Senator Roblin. I think that when we look at the structure of universities and how lower division classes are taught in comparison to the structure of community colleges, there are some differences in the way that they handle staffing. They're also, as the dual credit was expanding over the years in Oregon, it's something we're quite proud of. Oregon is actually ahead of the curve in working with high schools. NASEP has recognized that for us. But as it was expanding, there was concern in the state about ensuring that the courses would be robust and transferable, and the credit utility for students would be, you know, beyond question. And as a result of that, there were conversations that led to an Oregon administrative rule that covers community colleges and discusses instructor qualifications specifically, and it is not an administrative rule that affects the universities.
Follow up.
So my understanding would be if we could figure out ways to keep quality, proficiency, other kinds of things, we would also need to have the board look at administrative rules. So would that be a HEC administrative rules, or would that be rules in K-12?
Madam Chair, Senator Roblin, the current administrative rule was originally adopted by the State Board of Education while community colleges were under the State Board of Education. It is now moved over to HEC, and HEC would have the authority to look at that. The current administrative rule does address the qualifications of students as a minimum standard. I'm sorry, the qualification of faculty as a minimum standard. There are other ways to do it that colleges do use in terms of having an instructor of record that can work with the high school faculty to ensure that the quality is there. Those are more expensive to deliver, but it is a model that often does work to ensure that instructor qualifications and the quality of the program.
I will look up. Thank you.
Okay, thank you, Senator. Anything else for these two on Senate Bill 418? Oh, okay. I see there's two names written in here in the bottom. Thank you. Ozzy and Jared Mason Gear. And Ozzy, I don't know if you're in the room when I requested that we keep our testimony short. I only say that to the people in the room because Ozzy can give us verbatim the history of education for the last 45 years. So, you can. So let's just keep it to accelerated credit.
Go ahead, Chair.
Co-Chair Comp, Co-Chair Monroe, members of the committee, for the record, Jared Mason Gear from the Oregon Education Association. We represent roughly 42,000 educators across the country, including 3,500 community college faculty around the state. Our K-12 educators and our faculty don't always agree around these issues of dual credit and accreditation. They happen to agree around SB 418A. We don't always agree with the OCCA or the school boards. We happen to agree around SB 418A, where we believe there are a number of problems that are yet unresolved. Essentially, I would just echo all the concerns that Andrea raised from OCCA. In addition, I would direct you to testimony that our members supported around SB, submitted for SB 84. So SB 84 is the original language that has now become SB 418A. SB 84 died in committee because it didn't have the support, and I think there was an understanding that it still needed a lot of work, as these things do. It was resurrected and sent here for your consideration. Some of that testimony has been resubmitted, so you can find that in the record for 418A, but otherwise I would hope that you take a moment to look at what has been submitted on SB 84. We also submitted a white paper that our Community College Council, which is the leadership organization that represents our community college members, prepared over the course of the previous year. It provides a pretty thorough analysis and dissection of the different types of options that are available for delivering dual credits, and kind of ranks those programs that they believe would be effective and those that they believe are problematic. The program upon which SB 418A is based is among the programs that our members believe is the most problematic, and they have real concerns about transferability, around the rigor of the programs, around supports for students, supports for the educators that are participating in the program, and believe that there's a lot more work to be done to address those. I want to be clear that our members support dual credit, and they believe that there's a way to really provide it in an effective way. They provided testimony in the interim task force. They provided a great deal of, as I mentioned, extensive testimony in the policy committee, all of it designed to improve the program, not to stop the adoption of dual credits program, but to improve the program. We're hopeful that their suggestions would be heeded. At this point, I do think it'll be difficult to do that here in the legislature. And then I guess I just so want to encourage, if amendments do move forward addressing the fifth-year program, I would hope that would be a clean gut and stuff, and that the language of SB 418 would be stripped out, and that only the fifth-year program would be addressed, and we have time to come back and figure out some of the issues that remain around dual credits and accelerated learning. Thank you.
Thanks, Jared. Mr. Rose.
For the record, I'm Ozzie Rose, and I represent the Oregon Association Education Service Districts and the Washington County School Districts. And my testimony is direct primarily at the A10 amendments to 418. And by the way, I have to share this one thought. There's some irony to this whole discussion. So I got up this morning and looked at my computer, the home page for Infinity. Head article in the business section was bad news for future college students. And it goes on to explain that while 95% of parents view college education as important, only 25% of them view that they're going to help pay for it because it's getting too expensive. I just thought that was interesting that showed up this morning. Primarily, my issue is we would like the A10 amendments to expand the role of the task force that it proposes. And our issue is there's no disagreement about the value of dual enrollment and other programs designed to help kids or encourage them to pursue experiences that will make them successful post-college. I believe in your program the other day that you had on the phone from Tennessee about all that stuff. Everybody agrees this issue is an important issue to our kids and to our future. The literature is pretty clear that students who participate in such programs are more likely to meet college-ready benchmarks, to more likely to enter college and more likely to be successful in college work. In Oregon, we currently have a number of options in place and have been around. A lot of them are in the statutes, which I went back and read a little bit the last 2 days. We've had traditional dual credit models. We've had advanced placement courses. We have international baccalaureate. We have expanded options. We have accelerated college credit. We have now 50-year programs that are relatively new, but they're kind of a spin-off, or I think, of expanded options. And we have the promise programs that were, the original promise program was developed out in Eastern Oregon, involved a college and a community college and all the districts and so forth. And you folks were pretty impressed with what they did. And so last session you put up some money to help expand that. In other areas, and there are some being developed. Yet we sit here today discussing how do you limit fifth-year programs. And Thursday, the HEC's going to consider two proposals that would limit the expansion of the promise programs and require that the staff develop a process to get recommendations from the commission or other state action related to funding, allocations, program approvals, instructor qualifications, and research about their progress of students. All those are good ideas. We should be doing that about almost anything we do. But we believe that all the options ought to be on the table for such a discussion and review, and we know how all of them contribute to the success we want for our kids. We have a pre-K through 20 process that kids go through to get some kind of a piece of paper for their future. We call it a system. It isn't quite as good as a system when you look at the components and how they try to work together. And most of the criticism of the programs either involve around money distribution, or one critic of another program who has lots of people saying we're really good. And we've got to get over that a little bit and work at how do we really assess what we're doing so that we have a way for every kid all across the state to be successful and have access to the programs that will be successful. The fifth-year programs, the way they're currently funded, don't provide access to every kid. And in fact, if we provided access to every kid through that model, we'd essentially be adding another year of schooling in the state school fund, which is already kind of troubled on what it can do and can't do. So that's not a long-term answer. That doesn't say the programs themselves aren't good ideas. And so our suggestion is that we look at the A-10 amendments, re-look at the instructions to that task force, make sure that it addresses all the different ways you can get kids through this particular set of needs. And the larger question is to what extent are we going to provide tuition-free community college programs, and how are we going to pay for them? How are we going to get college credit and et cetera? The young lady here, that unbelievable number of hours of credit. And I took calculus. I was a math teacher, and I didn't take calculus until I was a sophomore in college. And she's already had pre-calculus and calc before she gets out of high school. We ought to pay some attention. Anyway, that's our we'd like to work with you on amending what a task force would do. We also like, if you passed Senate Bill 215, I don't know if you read it or not, it hadn't been before your house, but we're changing the role of the chief education officer. I think you know that.
Yep.
And one of the key changes we're making that we're going to help test the issue I raised, or at least I think we are, is can we have a system where there is a connection between the department or the divisions in it, and you make something happen? And as I understand how we've written the amendment to 215, the chief education officer is going to have some authority at those juncture points, early child into the K-12, K-12 into community college, et cetera. And that might help us really make this task force worthwhile and come back in the next session or even the next full session with answers on how to address these problems, other than worrying about whether we're taking money from one idea to fund another idea.
Thanks.
That I'll answer any questions.
Well, and thanks, Ozzy. And what I would ask, in because we have two more bills to go over yet, and we have approximately 20 minutes, that I know Ozzy and Jared are both in the building all the time. If you would love to talk more about these issues, I think all you have to do is call them up, and they'll be there for you. Okay, thank you. Co-Chair Monroe, before you.
And I think we need to make sure that when that task force is formed, that Ozzy's on it.
You're going to get 45 years of history.
I know. You only get 40 years of history here.
And Saturday was my 51st anniversary, so I can give you 51 years of history about what.
Congratulations. Congratulations. Representative Huffman.
As I don't want to undermine anything that we're talking about this morning, because it's all important. At least it is to us and a lot of folks, but to put things in perspective about lots of the rest of Oregon, I got an email this morning from my superintendent in the Dalles. It was 95 degrees in classrooms at the high school yesterday afternoon.
Ooh.
So while we're down here discussing things like this, they're going, could you talk about AC?
Well, in Hawaii, they just leave all, they don't build schools with walls.
But when there's no breeze and it's 95.
And Joel Fisher did come in, if you want to, you called him once, but.
Did he?
Yes.
You know,
Joel,
we need to
did you want? You should learn from Senator Roblin. If you're going to be late, at least bring chocolate.
I can do that.
Okay.
Chair Monroe, members of the committee, sorry I'm late. I wanted to make sure my bow tie was perfect for you guys.
Okay.
There's a lot of activity around this area in particular. How do we get students to go from high school to post-secondary education?
And Joel, if you state your name for the record.
Joel Fisher, Oregon Business Association. How do we get students to go from high school to post-secondary education? We as a state have begun looking at education from the, you know, P20 or even birth to 20 system. However, we still do have some defined funding streams. We think that these fifth-year programs are doing really good things. However, the funding source needs to be addressed as it's currently inappropriate, and we would urge this committee to do something around this fifth-year program and look at some of the other alternatives that we've been discussing, such as dual credits, accelerated learning, debt-free community college, and find another way to fund these types of programs. Thank you for your time.
Thanks, Joel. We appreciate you. We might give you a hard time, but we still appreciate you.
Close the public hearing,
yep,
and then open these jointly.
I'm going to close the public hearing on Senate Bill 418 and open the public hearing on Senate Bill 218 and House Bill 5025. Krista, give us a little bit of background, and we now have about 22 minutes.
Okay, sure. Madam Co-Chair, members of the committee, both of these bills establish some fees for the Higher Education Coordinating Commission. They both correspond to Policy Option Package 302 in the Governor's recommended budget, but it's been some time since that was printed, and there's been some changes out in the world. So we're in the process of reevaluating the revenue projections as well as the estimated workload and FTE impact as far as these two bills. And then we also have a -1 amendment for 5025, which just flips-flops some of the fee dollars that were not accurate when it was printed in the introduced version. So,
okay. I'm going to start with Juan Baez. Is it Ariando?
Good morning.
How bad did I say your last name?
Oh, you did well.
Okay. And you signed up for House Bill 5025. And welcome, Mr. McGee. Are you testifying or just here to answer questions?
Madam Chair, to support and answer any questions.
Awesome. Thank you.
218. Good morning, Co-Chair Comp, Co-Chair Monroe, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Juan Baez Arevalo. I'm the Director of Private Post-Secondary Education for the Oregon Higher Education Coordinating Commission. Before I go into the details of Senate Bill 218A, I would first like to share with you briefly a bit of background as to the need for the bill. In the last few years, the Office of Degree Authorization, ODA, has seen an explosion of online instruction and program offerings, which has added complexities to the oversight and authorization of out-of-state post-secondary degree providers and credit course offerings. With this growth comes a vast array of student and consumer protection issues. ODA fee schedules for out-of-state providers have not kept pace with the costs and the increased workload for regulating complex and ever-changing instructional delivery systems. An obvious fact that in-state private institutions shared with me soon after I took over the role of Director of Private Post-Secondary. This morning, they will be presenting to you their testimony in favor of SB 218A. You will also hear support from representatives of public universities because SB 218 assures they will be treated the same as out-of-state providers under the State Authorization Reciprocity Agreement. I believe you also received some testimony from one of our private career school owners in favor of SB 218A. Another issue that has arisen with out-of-state providers is the placement of students in practicum experiences in Oregon. For example, an institution in Chicago or Boston might place a Master of Science nursing degree student at a clinic in Oregon to complete his or her studies. These institutions must submit to the Higher Education Coordinating Commission a supervision, coordination, and assessment plan and meet the requirements set by the Oregon Board of Nursing. A placement in our state by an entity outside of our state means that they're taking a spot from an Oregonian in a program in the state of Oregon. As I will explain shortly, SB 218 will also assess a fee to review these types of placements in our state. Our private career schools also fall under the purview of the office that I oversee. The office conducts significant work to review and approve new programs. At this time, we are not assessing a fee for that work, which diminishes our opportunity to review new program submissions promptly. Now, what we seek to accomplish with SB 218A and Section 1 of SB 218 clarifies that out-of-state institutions must obtain approval from the HEC prior to beginning operations in the state or offering new programs. Out-of-state institutions seeking to enroll Oregonians will have to do so by one of two ways. A, be a participant in SARA in their home state, or B, through authorization by the ODA. Section 1.6 clarifies and imposes fees to non-SARA out-of-state distance education providers who are offering courses or programs in Oregon or adding new programs. Section 1.7 establishes fees for the practicum placement in Oregon by out-of-state institutions. It also allows us, the HEC, to waive the fee for one-time limited placements or special circumstances involving Oregon residents returning home to do their practicum in their home state. Finally, Sections 2 and 3 allow the HEC to impose a fee of up to $1,000 for each new program application submitted by a private career school. This fee would allow the Commission to recover costs associated with the complex task of reviewing program proposals. Ultimately, this bill is about ensuring that there's proper state oversight of private and out-of-state institutions, and that the interests of students as consumers are protected. Thank you for taking time to hear this bill.
Thank you. Questions about out-of-state institutions or accreditation? And did you have other comments for House Bill 5025?
Certainly. House Bill 5025 would ratify new and increased administrative fees for different functions of the units under the Office of Private Postsecondary Education. They will support primarily the Private Career Schools Unit, PCS, and the Office of Degree Authorization for the implementation of SARA. SARA is a new task for us. As you know, it's the State Authorization Reciprocity Agreement. Section 1 relates to the fees related to the administration of SARA. During the 2014 legislative session, Senate Bill 1525 and House Bill 4018 authorized the Higher Education Coordinating Commission to enter into and administer interstate agreements for post-secondary distance education and to impose a fee on any institution that seeks to participate in SARA so as to recover expenses. As we worked to design the appropriate biannual fee structure for SARA, we reviewed more than one option, including a flat fee for all Oregon institutions, regardless of size or online presence. We opted for a graduated scale similar to the one being used under the National Council for SARA, in part due to the concerns shared with our office that a flat fee would create a disproportionate higher cost for smaller institutions such as a small community college or a small nonprofit. The biannual fee is based on educational institutions' total enrollment. So it's based on their total enrollment on their size in terms of full-time equivalent FTE as shown in the Federal Integrated Post-Secondary Education Data System, or IPEDS. As mentioned, there's an amendment that has been requested to Section 1 of this bill to accurately reflect the biannual graduated fee scale that is outlined in the administrative rule. Section 2 of House Bill 5025 pertains to the fee schedule of the PCS unit. As part of our efforts of the Higher Education Coordinating Commission to make it possible for the units to operate sustainably without general fund allocations, we reviewed the Private Career Schools Unit fee schedule. The recommended fee changes are the result of our need to cover rising costs of administering the responsibilities of the unit and to recover the costs incurred in processing tasks such as teacher registration, search and retrieval of transcripts from closed private career schools, teacher trainee registrations, investigations, which can be very, very costly, and late processing of renewal applications. Our employee costs continue to rise, and our fee schedule for key tasks such as teacher registration and transcript search has not risen accordingly for several years. A very good number of years, much to my surprise. The additional revenue will help cover the cost of such tasks and also costs related with investigations or the denial or revocation of a license. Those are very costly endeavors on our part. They lead to contested case hearings, which are conducted by the Office of Administrative Hearings, and we incur many related legal fees for the services that are provided. Prior to submitting, and this is very important, prior to submitting the administrative rule changes related to the PCS fees, the proposed amendments were submitted to the PCS Advisory Committee twice for their review during the committee meetings on March 14th and on June 13th, of 2014. The committee advises the HEC on policies and regulations regarding career schools and the functions as our Rules Advisory Committee for rules pertaining to career schools. 7 of the 11 committee members represent career school owners and directors. And the meetings are regularly attended by school owners and representatives, as well as stakeholder groups such as the Association of Oregon Cosmetology Colleges and the Northwest Career Colleges Federation. The PCS Advisory Committee supported the staff proposal to increase the fees, as you see outlined in House Bill 5025. Thank you for taking time to hear this bill. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. This will probably be possibly on our agenda next week for passing the request for additional fees. So now's a good time to, you know, see if you have any other questions. I know that you guys are working hard in your department, so thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you.
Okay, and still here to testify on Senate Bill 218, we have Alfonso Braddock and Jeff Eng, and Ozzie left the room. So we're doing fine, so please.
I'm Alfonso Braddock. I'm with Oregon State University Extended Campus, and before you, you should have a copy of a written testimony that was submitted on behalf of 7 of the public institutions in support of SB 218. And the purpose behind our support of this the Senate bill is primarily that provision that that speaks to interstate agreements that then would exempt institutions from out of state from the various processes that the Higher Ed Coordinating Commission would perform to authorize those institutions. Oregon State University is in particular interested in this in that we are the single largest online provider of higher education in the state, providing education to students across all 50 states, which has resulted in our having to seek authorization from each state, which is quite a process, you can imagine, just with an individual state, but across all states. And our fellow institutions have had to endure that type of regulatory burden over the past several years, and we've accomplished that because we honor the process, obviously, but through the state authorization reciprocity agreement that Juan was referring to earlier, then the institutions would only need to be approved within their home state if the states are members of the reciprocity agreement. And so this Senate Bill 218 then would be that final piece that would bring that agreement together, in that it acknowledges then that reciprocity with other states who are part of CERA.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Good morning, Chair Comp and Chair Monroe and members of the committee. I'm Jeff Eng, and I'm the director of the Northwest Career Colleges Federation. For those of you who are not familiar with the Federation, we are a group associated schools in three states, Idaho, Washington, and Oregon. We support Senate Bill 218 for very similar reasons that you've heard before. Our member schools here in the state of Oregon did approach Mr. Baez some time ago about the inequity between the cost of operating a school here in the state of Oregon and the unfair advantage that schools out of state had to recruit students from here within our state. We are very pleased that the dialogue with his office has been very, very fruitful and very, very positive. And we are here to support the efforts that has been put forth in Senate Bill 218 for these efforts and firmly stand behind him and his office in this endeavor.
Thank you. Senator Roblin, this went through your committee. Any comments?
No, I thought the work that's been done getting to this point and the clarity with which they gave that explanation of that they're really trying to capture the cost that is costing them and that we shouldn't have our local universities helping subsidize costs for these people coming in, it makes a lot of sense. So, good bill.
Okay. Any other thoughts or comments from the rest of the committee? Thank you. Thank you for your patience. I hope you enjoyed the student testimony as much as we did. So
definitely. Thank you.
Yes. Anybody else here to testify on House Bill 5025 or Senate Bill 218? Okay, I'm going to close both those bills. And Krista, what's happening tomorrow?
Okay, tomorrow we've got three bills on the agenda, two work sessions and one possible work session. So hopefully everyone will be here to vote.
And on time.
I'll work on that.
Well, we don't do too bad, so I appreciate that. And all those bills are on OLIS, and so that we can study those ahead of time. Anything else for the good of the order? Co-Chair Monroe?
Oh, I think we're fine. I will see you this afternoon where we'll be meeting with the big co-chairs. And, you know, continuing our work on the education budgets and all of the long list of bills that we have. So hopefully in a fairly short time we'll be able to report to the full subcommittee what our recommendations are and what's going to be funded and what's not going to be funded.
Well, you can I'll let them know what will be funded and you can do the what's not going to be funded. Okay, we are adjourned.
Yeah, I can play bad cop.
Sure, that's the share of responsibility.
I can play bad cop.
Sure, that's the share of responsibility.